Chapter 31, How Magic Works. April 27th, Mirth. Stavius opened his eyes and stared at the wooden ceiling above his head. He had been sleeping in one of the hero cottages in the training village. This might be the last time he would ever wake up in this world, so he spent a few minutes savoring its pure air and rural sounds. Sunlight was streaming in the cottage window, and the clatter of people eating breakfast in the communal dining area softly echoed in the room. Savius sighed and climbed out of bed. He was the last one to get up, and the rest were finishing their meal when he sat down at the table. No one was rushing him, though. Ops still wasn't back, and the others seemed to be in similarly reflective moods. No one was talking about the battle or about their impending task. They were trying to make these final moments last as long as possible. Janice broke their reverie by noting that there were still things to prepare before either Ops or the unicorns and their army arrived. The group pushed themselves back from the table and headed for the cave. Saturn grabbed one more slice of toast with a thick spread of blackberry preserves on top as he left, and Versera shook her head.
"What? This might be the last time I ever get a chance to taste food this good," lamented their portly instructor.
They spent the morning building as much of the magical motor/generator as they could. Janice had managed to fit the parts together, but they were missing one crucial element, the crown of Helios. Janice had removed the jewels and ornamentation from the other talismans to reveal their actual purposes. The Spear of Mars was the motor/generator shaft, while the beads on the necklace of Venus were its bearings, and the jewels of Luna were the brushes. The Ring of the Air was the commutator, the Core of the World was the rotor coil, the Cradle of Terra was the motor/generator housing, and the Crown of Helios contained the stator magnets. The assembled device looked quite similar to the motor sitting in the middle of Great Saltpeter Cave back home. However, it wouldn't do anything without the stator magnets from the Crown of Helios. Nevertheless, the team hoisted it from Merlin's workbench. They then carried it to the stand constructed by Janice in the center of the training room. Janice connected two thick cables he had fashioned, which extended down into the ground and gave the fan a little spin. The motor spun smoothly, but ground to a stop after a few seconds. Janice explained that it should draw magical current through the leads, continue to turn, and create the portal once the magnets were in place. Until then, the device was nothing more than a decoration. Elisa noted the seven mattresses positioned around the generator in the same arrangement as on Earth and asked what they meant. Merlin agreed, noting that he hadn't done anything like that when he built the portal. Janice snorted, "And maybe that's why it didn't work. Listen, I don't know how much of this is ritual and how much is necessary, but we need to anchor these two worlds together. Jessica claimed this was important and her portal worked, so I just followed her instructions." Jessica, whose image was standing nearby looking like a ghost, explained that this configuration was necessary. She said that everything about the prophecy involved prime numbers and centered around prime number 7 in particular. She then asked if anyone knew the most common element in our atmosphere. Veronica moaned that back home it was smog. Narayana joked that it was the gas from Saturn's last meal. Their instructor had just let loose a particularly stinky fart. They all laughed at her joke before Elisa said that everyone knew that our air was primarily oxygen. Jessica said, "No." And everyone stopped laughing. Earth's atmosphere is only 21% oxygen. 78% of our air is nitrogen, with the remaining 1% consisting of argon, carbon dioxide, and Saturn's last meal. Wow, that is a surprising and completely useless bit of trivia, but do either of your observations have any bearing on Elisa's original question about our sleeping arrangements? Asked Narayana. She disliked Jessica and her riddles. Jessica simply smiled a mischievous grin and asked, "And what is nitrogen's atomic number?" Narayana screamed that she had no idea because none of us had studied chemistry yet when Elisa cried out, "Oh, great gods! Nitrogen's atomic number is 7! It has 7 electrons and 7 protons!" That shut everyone up. The group stared at Elisa before looking at Jessica, who was silently clapping and saying, "Very good. The 7 talismans in your device are the protons, and you are the 7 electrons. Specifically, the 4 heroes are sublevel S electrons, while Janice, Ops, and Saturn are sublevel P electrons. Furthermore, the 2 heroes closest to the device are in principle energy level 1. The rest of you are in principle energy level 2. None of this made any sense to any of the heroes other than Elisa. She asked, "But what about the 7 neutrons found in nitrogen?" Jessica smiled. "They don't have a charge, so they don't have an effect on the transfer. However, you are correct in that they do have counterparts to bond the atom together. The roles of the 7 neutrons are played by Safe, Betelgeuse, Rigel, Bellatrix, Alnitak, Alnilam, and Mintaka." "Our dragon friends," Rosera and Narayana sighed together in amazement. Elisa asked, "But who or what are the neutron equivalents back on Earth?" Jessica scowled and admitted, "I really don't know. We didn't have any, and it didn't affect the transfer. That is something which I've never figured out, and it has always bothered me. Your genus, however, wants to try a modification which I don't believe will have any effect." Narayana seemed particularly pleased that know-it-all Jessica didn't have an answer. The dragons, who had somehow all crammed themselves into the cavern as well, seemed delighted to have their role confirmed, and the room was suddenly echoing with a half-dozen simultaneous conversations. Everyone turned to look at Janice. Janice said, "Well, neutrons are packed next to protons in an atom's nucleus and have roughly the same mass as protons, so there is no way to cram the dragons on top of the generator, especially Juice." Everyone laughed, and Juice tried to take a little bow in the now cramped room. "So I did the next best thing. I had the dragons donate 7 gastroliths, and I placed them around the generator here on Mirth. On Earth, I placed 7 similarly sized stones around our motor. I figured that these unrefined dragon stones contain the dragon's energy and are roughly the same mass as the device. They won't add much power, but should balance the equation and might give us a smoother ride. Jessica agrees that they won't hurt anything, so it seems worthwhile to give it a try." Janice noticed Elisa frantically trying to get everyone's attention and nodded in her direction. She thanked him and turned to Jessica. She asked, "Pardon me, but this business about balanced equations, dimensions, and energy levels is sounding more and more scientific. I'm starting to think that magic and prime numbers are more related to physics and chemistry than mysticism and numerology. Am I right?"
Jessica nodded and seemed to settle into teaching mode. Stavius felt a lecture coming on, but it seemed as though it would be more exciting than math class or even Ms. Dotta's club S&M lectures. Besides, they were still waiting for Ops to return with her crown of Helios, so they couldn't do much else anyway.
Jessica began, "Magic is only magical to you because you don't understand how it works. Do any of you know how matter and energy are related?" Stavius knew this one and was the first to reply, "Sure, E equals MC squared." Jessica smiled and said, "You are so cute, but I am referring to matter, while your equation relates energy to mass." "Your equation is correct, but matter is more complicated than mass. You should also learn the equation S equals function of E and K, or matter is a function of energy and information. And, before you ask, we use S for matter and K for information, because the variables M and I are already widely used." It was evident that none of Jessica's students understood what she meant, so she began explaining as though they were small children. "Mass and matter are fundamentally different concepts. You can have a kilogram of water and a kilogram of lead, which have precisely the same mass, but are very different forms of matter. The same is valid with energy. Light, gravity, and magnetism are all forms of energy, but they behave very differently. Consider the dirt, cloth, and smear of blackberry jam on Saturn's shirt. They all have mass, but what makes them different?" Saturn wiped at the stain on his shirt and replied, "They are constructed from different combinations of molecules, of course." This wasn't quite the answer Jessica wanted. She said, "Yes, yes, and molecules are constructed from different combinations of atoms, which are built from various combinations of subatomic particles, but all mass is formed from the same subatomic particles. So what causes some of these particles to form carbon atoms, while others form hydrogen?" Ertish softly answered, "The difference is in how those atoms are constructed."
Jessica shouted, "Exactly! All atoms break down into protons, neutrons, and electrons, which break down further into a fundamental soup of 42 subatomic particles. The differences between matter and mass and between structured energy and pure energy is information."
"A novel would be a good metaphor. The entire story consists of nothing more than a small number of upper and lower case letters and symbols.
Vocabulary, grammar, and plots are all information for combining those characters into a compelling tale. Thus, our novel and our universe would be pretty dull without information. Stavius interrupted with a chuckle. 42, really? As in, The Answer to Life, the Universe, and Everything, from Douglas Adams' The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? Janice was the only other person laughing, and Narayana sarcastically observed, How very odd. 42 is not a prime number. I thought every important number in the universe was supposed to be a prime number. How can this be? Jessica was not pleased with the interruption and glared at Narayana, Stavius, and Janice as she continued. I am not familiar with this Adams fellow, but I suspect that he was some forward-thinking physicist from your era, and while you are correct that 42 is not a prime number, it is the sum of two significant prime numbers, 29 and 13. There are 29 subatomic matter particles in the universe. These include various neutrinos, electron particles, quarks, antiparticles, and the Higgs boson. There are also 13 force particles, which include photons, gluons, and weak force carriers. Finally, there are various forms of information. These differentiate pure matter and energy into the 42 particle types and drive them to combine into the myriad of elements and forces forming our universe. Mass and energy are the building blocks of physics, and information is its rules. Narayana interjected, But what about dark matter? Jessica replied, Dark matter and dark energy are not real and not important to this discussion. Narayana scoffed, I think the physicists in our time would disagree with you. They are pretty confident that dark matter exists. I think you're just making all this up. Jessica shouted, I am not making this up. I am just trying to keep things simple for you. Of course dark energy and dark matter must exist to create a stable universe. Versera said, But you just said that dark matter isn't real. Which is it? I agree with Narayana. I think you're a fraud. You can't seem to keep your story straight. That insult was more than Jessica could bear. She said, Very well, I will answer your question, but you will not understand my remarks, and I am not going to take the time to explain. You see, all of the incredible variation and complexity in our universe is governed by 7 vector variables in 6 simultaneous equations. The coefficients of the variables in these equations are the mass and energy levels of the 42 subatomic particles. Of course, you cannot solve for 7 variables with only 6 equations. Also, anyone who understands even a little about eigenvalues and eigenvectors knows that you cannot have a stable system unless it is a square matrix. Thus, we need a 7th equation with 7 additional coefficients to create a square 7x7 matrix. Those additional 7 coefficients are the mass and energy levels of the 7 dark subatomic elements. There are 5 dark subatomic mass particles and 2 dark force particles. Narayana said, But... Jessica held up her finger and continued, But... While mathematics demands that these subatomic particles and forces exist to balance the equations and create a stable system, they cannot be measured. The reason for this is that their masses and energy levels are not real. Dark subatomic mass particle and force values are imaginary numbers. Everyone in the room was utterly confused, and the only one who appeared to be happy was Stavius. He was grinning from ear to ear because, for once, he wasn't the one whose question initiated a confusing math lecture. Jessica resumed her talk. As I was saying before I was rudely interrupted, the law of conservation of mass and energy prohibits either mass or energy from escaping our 3-1 universe. However, that is not the case for information. Information can be transmitted across temporal dimensions as instructions. It can be how to combine matter and energy to create the 42 real and 7 imaginary particles. It can also be a new universal rule defining how to combine particles into specific forms of matter or energy. Or it can simply be a message. Janice complained, But Mirth has magic. How can it be the same world or even the same universe? Stavius guessed. Because magic isn't magical. Janus stared at his friend with a questioning look, and Stavius continued, I don't pretend to understand this, but I think that magic is simply energy combined using different information. The reason why Mirth has magic is that it has information on how to form it that Earth doesn't. Jessica shouted, Yes! Magic is nothing more than a different way to combine the 13 force particles into a new form of energy using additional information. And someone is broadcasting that information on a multidimensional sine wave with a 1,231-year temporal period and a 1,033-mile physical period. Oh, and Narayana, both of those cycles are prime numbers whose digits add to 7. Saturn gasped. That is the link between God's word and science. Louis Janus was right. The prophecy is a message from God sent from the future. Jessica scowled and replied, Yes, a religious person might interpret it that way. Or perhaps someone in the future is playing God and transmitting a signal backward through time, which alters the physics of our corner of the galaxy. I did not know that, came a voice from behind them. It was Mars. The gods had returned. Stavius grumbled, Nice to see you've come back, guys. I assume that you're here to watch the show. It would have been nice to have some help yesterday in Septumculus. Goddess Terra answered, There was nothing we could have done, and yes, we came to witness the prophecy's fulfillment. You are about to become the gods of your world just like us. Well, not just like you, laughed Janus. They have bodies. You're just spirits. The heroes weren't laughing, and Stavius cautiously asked, What became of the four gods' bodies? The gods claimed they couldn't remember, but Jessica knew. She stared at the ground as she pointed at four shapes standing in the shadows. The Soul Reapers had also joined the group. Jessica whispered, Teleporting the generator to the Earth's core ripped my heroes' minds from their bodies. Both aspects survived and became eternal, but separate. The gods' spirit forms can manipulate magical energy at a primitive level to shape the world and to create new forms of life. However, they can't perform magic any better than Stavius. The gods' bodies are the Soul Reapers who resonate with this prophecy signal, but who have almost no consciousness. They can identify hero candidates and teleport them to the training ground, and they are the ones who recognize new geographic focal points and teleport the training facility to the new area every millennium. Beyond that, they are merely mindless husks awaiting their next instruction. Stavius felt nauseous. He was about to become one of the very creatures he had most feared his entire life. His body was destined to roam the earth as a Soul Reaper for eternity while he became a ghost. This was not what he expected. No one had explained that this was a part of the deal. He wasn't allowed to wallow in his newfound misery for long, though. There was a huge commotion at the entrance as two more dragons squirmed into the room. Bee and Reggie had arrived. The once cavernous training room was now cramped with 7 dragons, 6 travelers, 4 Soul Reapers, 4 god spirits, 2 memory images, and the generator. Janus was glad that Granny had decided to go back to her own cave for a nap.
Hey guys, what you doing?
Asked Reggie. Waiting for Ops to arrive with the crown. Do you have her? Stavius eagerly replied.
No, were we supposed to bring her? Why didn't anyone tell us?
Asked Reggie.
Oh, I'm sure they did, Reg, but you probably didn't pay attention as usual,
grouched Bee. She was tired from their long trip back from Florida, uncomfortable in the cramped room, and grumpy that they still hadn't had a chance to unpack.
Nope, the only thing we were asked to do was to slow down the unicorns, which are almost here, by the way. You better hurry up and do whatever you need to do.
Unicorns? What are they doing out? Asked a woman's voice.
It was Larsa, standing next to Ops in the narrow hall leading to the Soul Reaper's room.
The travelers' hearts soared when they saw Ops. Narayana quickly ordered all the dragons to go outside and stave off the unicorns as Ops handed Janus her crown of Helios. Stavius thanked her and asked how she traveled to the cave. Ops simply noted that it was handy to have a vampire friend who could teleport, when Larsa interrupted her and repeated her question regarding the unicorns.
Frisera explained how Stavius had re-energized the ancestral horns in exchange for Queen Esthara's agreement to assist them in the fight. The unicorns honored their contract and left their haven behind the walls of Equus to save the Latian army. Queen Esthara even helped them acquire 2 of the talismans before trying to steal them.
Larsa shook her head and said, Well, you'd better hurry then. Those horses will be here soon, and you will never escape them. You see, the walls around their kingdom weren't built to keep the world out of Echoes. They were constructed to keep the unicorns in.
Unicorns once ruled this entire region, enslaving everyone except for dragons and a few vampires with their telepathic abilities. The unicorns had complete control over humans, but their powers were less potent with centaurs, satyrs, and vampires. A rebel alliance formed between the unaffected races hundreds of years ago, and we overthrew the unicorns. The centaurs built the wall, they became the unicorns' prison guards, while a community of satyrs agreed to live inside to care for them. The only way the unicorns were defeated was by me sneaking into their royal vault and draining the energy from their ancestral horns. They will be unstoppable if they get their hooves on a talisman. You must either fulfill the prophecy or destroy those talismans before they break in. Janice said, "Well, then let's fulfill the prophecy. The motor is ready." The travelers nervously settled into their positions while Larsa dashed out of the cave to help the dragons. Janice was struggling to turn the motor shaft when Stavius offered to help. He drew a bit of magical energy up from the ground through one of Janice's cables. The power surged through the motor and returned to the ground through the other wire. The shaft began to spin. Janice and Stavius joined the others on their mats and waited as the motor spun faster and faster. 5 minutes later, Narayana asked, "Are we there yet?" And everyone burst out in nervous laughter. There was a flash of light a few seconds later, and the seven travelers were suddenly surrounded by darkness. Frisara said, "Well, that was disappointing." Narayana agreed, "Yeah, it looks like we blew a fuse." Janice disagreed, "No, I don't think so." Narayana asked, "What makes you say that?" Janice replied, "Because I'm a girl."